If you're a customer and you know more about a device that someone is coming to see you and selling it to you, then that's a poor situation. Really, I think nowadays, good reps should not only know, be the experts about their device, they should also know a huge amount about how that device is used, both procedurally and in the hospital.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there, ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals. And this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now it's time to go Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Nick Williams, independent business consultant. Nick was born in Middlesbrough, UK, and went to Highgate School in London, subsequently attending Bangor University in Wales, and graduated with a degree in marine zoology. After spending 4 years in the pharmaceutical industry, Nick joined Olympus in the UK as a territory manager in the medical division. He rose through the ranks, taking on various roles, including divisional manager of medical. After a 3.5 year stint running the Olympus surgical business in the U.S., he returned to Olympus in 2007 as executive director of medical business and operations. In 2011, he was appointed group managing director of Olympus ChemMed in the U.K., IRE, and the MEA, reporting directly to the global headquarters in Japan. This role included responsibilities for all the Olympus ChemMed group businesses, including medical, industrial, consumer electronics, microscopy, and global manufacturing of ancillary products. Nick is now semi-retired, working as an independent business consultant in a variety of business areas, but has particular interest in the medical device industry. And I guess I would say he definitely has significant interest. He spent quite a bit of his career, Hank, in the medical device area. Obviously, just reading everything that he's done just now in his intro, he's going to have a lot of thoughts on what makes a successful rep. And he started as a territory manager, so as he climbed the ranks, I'm sure he has lots of insights to share with us today.
That's right, Justin. One of the great things about doing the Beyond Clean podcast is we get to talk to folks all around the globe who know what they're talking about. And so I'm looking forward in particular to this episode to talk to somebody who really understands the good, the bad, and the ugly about medical device sales reps, and hopefully give us insight not only from the user perspective in sterile processing or in the operating room to know the good reps to look for and what qualities, but also maybe even encourage the vendors out there listening today to change their game and be proactive about how they treat and how they view their customers.
Certainly should be a lot of takeaways for both sides of the table, both the frontline managers and technicians out there, as well as the sales representatives and territory managers. So definitely looking forward to this one.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs.
It's 2023 and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Nick Williams, an independent business consultant from the UK. And Nick, this is a topic I didn't think of it. I'm going to give Hank lots of credit for coming up with this one, but I think it is an awesome topic, and it's not one that we've discussed or maybe even lightly touched on, but what to look for in a medical device sales representative and really, you know, holding our partners accountable. So welcome, and thank you so much for coming on to the show and not only sharing your insights on this topic, but giving us a global perspective as well.
Thank you for having me.
So, Nick, let's, as we like to say on this show, set the table. Let's format what we're going to be talking about today, and starting with who are medical device sales representatives, where are they hired from, and then we can go into maybe the required backgrounds, if any.
Sure. I mean, the simple, straightforward answer to who are medical device sales reps is sales reps who work for a medical device company, which sounds obviously straightforward, but the truth is in many different markets in the world, companies have either a direct sales model, an agent or distributor sales model, or a mixed sales model, meaning that the person that's visiting your hospital and seeing the customer could either be directly working for example, Johnson & Johnson, or they could be working for an agent that buys off Johnson & Johnson, but they may still have Johnson & Johnson on their card alongside the agent name. And ultimately, I think that doesn't really make too much difference, other than it depends on how big their bag is and how big their territory is. You know, we can come back to that maybe later on, but that obviously affects what they're doing. I mean, if they have a very large bag in orthopedics, gynecology, urology, and selling devices into all of those areas, then they may not be particularly – they'll probably have some what I call crutch products that they really like, and they get a lot of they get most of their commission from, and the rest of it they may not do. So there's quite a few variables with that. What seems like a very straightforward question: what are medical device sales reps?
So I'd like to ask you a true or false question, Nick. Or device reps should be experts regarding their devices and services? True or false?
I think that's straightforward and it should be true. I think if you're a customer and you know more about a device that someone is coming to see you and selling it to you, then that's a poor situation. Really, I think nowadays good reps should not only know, be the experts about their device, they should also know a huge amount about how that device is used both procedurally and in the hospital. So the first question was who are medical device sales reps? Which seems very straightforward, but it's probably not as straightforward as people think it is. The same question is who are customers from the manufacturer's perspective? You know, for a surgical device, you've got the surgeon, you've got the other people in the OR, you've got the people who clean and disinfect that, you've got the people that buy it. There's a number of those people in what I used to call the buying chain. There's a number of links in the buying chain, and a good salesman has to basically be professional with all of those links.
And that topic is interesting, and I don't know what this necessarily looks like in the UK context, but I will say in the States, we see a fair amount of companies trying to take some pressure off of their frontline sales staff. And so they're creating what they call clinical educators, for instance, yeah. that they'll say, well, yeah, you know, we don't really know that, but we can hook you up with somebody who does know, you know, but you're arguing here that that may not be a good enough answer, or maybe you don't have to know everything that the clinical educator knows, but you should still have an expertise level there that you can reasonably engage with questions that customers have that are just basic questions like, how do we compliantly clean this device, or does this, is this device supposed to come apart for reprocessing, or is it supposed to be processed together? Yep. I don't think that's too much to ask of a salesperson, but yeah, there is that dynamic.
Not at all. And the salesperson should be, should know exactly how to do that. And also, more importantly, how to educate someone to do that simply and quickly and repeatably.
Yeah. So from the manufacturer side, then, if you were hiring a new device sales team, and maybe they're coming in from different backgrounds or even different product lines, what would the training process look like for this sales team from the manufacturer's perspective? Is this, is it reasonable to say, take a 1 day training for cleaning, reprocessing, or the customer facing conversations as it relates to sterile processing, or is this something that's more ongoing and in depth? I don't even know the answer to that question.
Well, I think it's a difficult one to answer succinctly, because it really depends on the both the company and the product. I mean, if you mentioned clinical educators, and certainly in the UK, usually call them clinical application specialists. So it depends on the kind of model that they're doing. And you can argue the application specialist may know more about the procedures or how it is processed or whatever. And the sales rep does a lot more of what I would call, in my earlier analogy of a buying chain, the salesperson deals with the financial side of the buying chain, and the clinical applications person deals with the procedural clinical buying part of the buying chain. But that really depends on the culture of the company, the business model that they've done. Whatever happens, I think from a sales rep's perspective, they must at least have had very good training on the device and how it is used within the hospital, a minimum. So they must know how it's used and how it's used in the hospital. From a manufacturer's perspective, I've had experience with all sorts of different models, with clinical application specialists or educators, also with sub reps, where you've got a rep who's been very successful on a territory, and then he or she has a real problem with the logistics of everything, and then gets a sub rep in. So again, it may be, when you say, you know, who are the first question was, who are medical device sales reps? It could be a sub rep, but they should still have the same training, and they should know, you know, exactly how to deal with questions, issues on a sophisticated level.
So Nick, great points there. And I think in the States, a lot of times you'll hear them be called field support reps or even account managers versus
there's a lot of different nomenclature.
Yeah, absolutely. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, I realize it depends on the company, the culture. It also depends on the type of product that they're bringing in. But I kind of had two follow-up questions. What kind of a background do you think should a sales rep have? And I guess it depends, again, on what type of service they're delivering. But should there be some requirements on past experience, or should it only be sales experience? And then tagging off of that, can you give us some things that would make a rep successful? What are some of the things that a frontline technician or manager, when they're looking to do business and somebody knocks on their door for the first time and comes in, what are some key things they should be looking for to say, you know what, this person here, this is a good rep, and it's because they do these things?
Really, I think it's in terms of two aspects of that. You know, how do you hire them? What are you looking for in terms of their background? I think that used to be very simple. I would say I've been in the industry sort of 30 years, and years ago, it was, you had a graduate caliber person, and you looked for sales experience in the medical device area, and you could fill those positions. That changed in 30 years, and I don't know what the situation is in the States right now, but I know when I was in the States, you know, you couldn't hire superstars very easily. And you had to start spreading your net, to use a fishing analogy. And so we started hiring from obviously from the industry. We hired from other areas of sales. We hired from, we even started hiring from teaching, from the armed forces, from obviously hospitals. So I think now it's not really a necessarily required background. It's a required set of skills and abilities. Drive, intelligence, communication skills are fundamental. You know, they're just a basic. You know, if you don't have all of those three, you won't be successful as a salesperson. So that's a bit more of a difficult one on an initial encounter between the customer and the salesperson. Obviously, as I said, it looks like they have drive, they have intelligence, and they also have communication skills. But really, you know, things that I think are important and certainly important from a manufacturer's perspective is attitude. From a, they have to have a customer a very high level of customer orientation. So the customer must be king or queen. And, you know, they have to really, I think, get that over to the customer in a short period of time. They have to be people that, you know, it's the classic cliche that I used to hear when I was a salesman, admittedly 450 years ago, was really, you know, are you one of these people that you pre-sale, you're here, post-sale, you're gone. And I think that's an interesting point, which came up many, many times when I was out in field. And the answer to that is you can't, in an initial meeting with a customer salesman situation, customer can't know that. But they will know that potentially if they talk to other customers of that company and that salesman visits. But they have to have a real high level of post-sales involvement, provided that is necessary. If they're just selling a scalpel handle, then there's probably not too much post-sales required. But clearly, there's a lot of post-sales required if the device is a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah, that's great. You bring up a great point with the different basically languages that you speak. So is there a different language of a salesman versus a consultant versus a partnership? And is that really important? And what should it look like practically if you do have to have those different type hats / skills?
I think the simple answer to that question is it matters depending on the complexity of the product, the service that salesperson is selling. I think to use my example of a scalpel handle, if it's a commodity type item and it's a scalpel handle, sorry if anyone's listening who sells scalpel handles, but it is a commodity. That's a different situation to, for example, where you need a consultant or a partnership. I think even with a scalpel handle, the partnership term may be relevant. You know, you don't want to sell someone 1,000 scalpel handles if they only need 500. And if the salesman does sell 1,000 handles to that customer and they only need 500, then clearly that will still come back on that salesman. In terms of a consulting type of sales role, I mean, the consultative selling is a cliche used a lot in the industry, but I think it's quite important. I'm trying to think of an example. I'll give you an example from my own experience when I was out in field as a sales manager with a new salesman. And we went to see a gynecologist who was interested in an outpatient flexible hysteroscope. So it's a scope to look into the uterus. The salesman was going in there. He knew everything about the device. He had it with him. He was looking in there to sell the scope. But actually, we ended up having a consulting type discussion about setting up an outpatient hysteroscopy service that took about an hour and a half. And we hardly talked about the device because the consultant hadn't even thought about, sorry, the clinician hadn't even, we call them consultants in the UK. That would be ambiguous with the consulting term with selling. The clinician hadn't even thought about setting up an outpatient system. You know, what fluid, would he use fluid? Would he use gas? What's the cleaning and disinfection situation? How's it going to be? Where's it going to be cleaned? Is it going to be cleaned in the endoscopy unit? Is he going to clean it? What's the health and safety of the disinfectants surrounding that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is a very consultative situation, which needs a consulting type selling approach rather than selling a scalpel handle.
Great. And I keep going back to what you were saying earlier, which goes into that hour and a half, you know, consultation conversation is if you're not a subject matter expert on not only your product and service, but how that fits in with the overall workflow, then, and you don't even have the ability to be a consultant, right? Because you don't know what you're talking about.
No.
And if there's anything in this industry on the customer side, we can tell very, very quickly if somebody is trying to put on airs as if they know our process or they know our flow, but in reality, they just know a couple of talking points, enough to be dangerous, right?
Yeah.
Now, that being said, and I know, like, even in Justin's experience, there are a lot of sterile processing leaders and operating room leaders out there who are willing to teach. If a device rep wants to learn and wants to understand the process better and comes in transparently to say, hey, I am new and I want to learn about this industry and I want to be a resource to you and to others. You know, can you enlighten me on these processes and on these regulations? Like, that can really build tremendous relationships, number one, but it can build tremendous value in those device reps if they will, I don't know a better way to say, humble themselves, come in with that attitude of, I've got a lot to learn still, even outside of my little niche in my product or service. And in my own experiences, the sales reps who have done that, and even if they have expertise, you know, still continue to learn every single day in every department they have and every conversation they have. I mean, that really pushes the needle in a direction that you want to go as a device sales team. Right.
Yeah.
I did want to follow here though on the customer service topic that we've brought up a couple of times, and you alluded, you know, to the challenge of, are you there before the sale but not present after the sale? And it depends on what it is again. But I was just wondering if you had anything else to kind of describe what a high level of customer service looks like in this context.
I think, again, to reiterate, it depends on the specific product and the company you're dealing with. But if there is a lot of after sales required, then it's an absolute essential that the pre-sale may even be less important than the post-sale. I'm just thinking of specific experiences in terms of, to use the sterile services area, I guess, you know, I've never actually been in the autoclave business, but if you're selling an autoclave, selling cleaning machines, you know, the whole thing, you know, how those are serviced and how quickly they are serviced is going to be critical to your decision making. And if they break down and, you know, they're down for 7 days, that's pretty catastrophic. So it does depend on the situation. But I think overall customer service is always critical on the vast majority of more complicated medical devices.
Now, in general, customer service matters because if you don't provide it, eventually you're opening the door for a competitor. And even as a very simple approach as a sales rep, like you mentioned, you know, with the handles, even in that scenario, if you lack service, you're going to be exposed. But I also want to talk about ethics and compliance, because ethically, that customer service approach should always be in play. But I think managing just general compliance, and especially related to contract compliance, can be very difficult, especially in the United States for hospitals. I know they look at compliance and they manage the documentation and when is the contract going to come up. But some, I'll just say suppliers kind of globally there, some suppliers are really good about doing regular business reviews and taking that consultative approach and saying, here's the data. This is what the data is telling us. This is going to help you make good decisions. And others really don't do a good job, and they are kind of more like their pre-sale and not their post-sale. And again, you know, especially when you're selling capital equipment, like you just mentioned, sometimes you get away with that for a little while, but this is a small industry. You start running into the same people and you get a reputation. So ethically is how we manage ourselves, but compliance is how we get managed. And I'm speaking from the supplier side.
I think the first point, compliance means relatively different things in different parts of the world. And certainly, I mean, from a UK perspective, if you mention compliance now, you're really talking about compliance to the UK Bribery Act. So there's a compliance in terms of ethics and bribery and corruption. That area I know in the States has been very, very big. It was big when I was over there, and rightly so. I mean, it's actually, from that perspective, it's a very straightforward thing. There shouldn't be any inducement to purchase, you know, something like a, you know, tickets to a ballpark or a fishing trip or a skiing trip. You know, those things used to happen many, many, many years ago, but clearly they're completely inappropriate inducements to purchase. From a general compliance perspective, in terms of you're talking about contractual compliance, I'm assuming you mean, are you fulfilling all of the terms of the contract that you've signed? You make a good point about sort of business reviews. I think, you know, that's again part of the post sales, which is really critical for the customer. Because, I mean, to use my own background and example, one of the areas of business I used to deal with was the GI endoscopy area, and GI endoscopes are expensive items, and they go obviously into patients and then into nasty disinfectants to sterilize, well, high level disinfect them. How those, they will break. They'll, you know, how you look at your repair, how you look at what scopes you have on service contract, what scopes you don't have on service contract. And the whole management of the endoscopic inventory in that situation is a huge issue that requires, you know, regular reviews with the customer to see basically, are they getting value for money? So I think that's a sort of probably an extreme scenario. But equally with, I guess, contractual compliance on, for example, a single patient use set of devices for surgery, you know, something like that, you know, it's also about inventory management. Different, I think, in terms of the level of complexity of the inventory management comparison to the GI endoscope example I gave. But still, you don't want hundreds and hundreds of dollars sitting on your shelf with staplers or whatever device it is when you don't need them.
Very good. Nick, could you do me a favor and discuss the challenges regarding territory size, the number of accounts you might have, and the resources that impact territory size?
Well, I think that I mentioned right at the start of this discussion, probably that in terms of a sales rep, whether they're a direct sales rep who works for the specific company or whether they are a sales rep working for an agent or a distributor. An example I gave was how big the bag is and how big the territory is. And I think those two variables are important from a customer service perspective and a post-sales perspective, because clearly if you're covering two states or if you're covering one city, that's a big difference in terms of how quickly you can get around. Having said that, the issue is also with the size of the bag, because you may be covering two states with a very small bag, or you may be covering a city with a very large bag where you're going into every single department in that hospital. So those, I think, are quite key variables. Whilst I'm saying that, and obviously the impression I'm giving is you're much better off dealing with a salesman or salesperson who has a small bag and a small territory. And that may be true, but that will naturally sort of bias you and skew you more towards larger companies. And that may not be in your interest, because clearly there's small, innovative device manufacturers out there who may be producing a very good product, which is really useful for you. But because if you're using those two variables, they may have a reasonably large bag and they may be covering a whole state or more. So I think whilst I'm saying in general, you should look at how big the bag is and how big the territory is, there are some caveats on that. And I think, you know, a small innovative company is a good example of, I would probably go back and say, well, in that situation, it may well be worth your while to look at those companies.
Yeah. And sometimes they'll customize a solution and be able to do so much more quickly. And they have less additional considerations from their general customer base that might be in conflict with what you're asking them to do. Last question. What are some support and resources that should be provided by the company or that may be provided by the company that impact good and bad? And maybe that's not the right term, but just sales reps and their success in general.
I think, I mean, obviously we keep harping on about service and it depends on how that's structured within the organization. But in general, the service will be structured differently.
And actually, Nick, you know, that's a really good point, because structurally I've seen some companies where sales and service is siloed all the way up to like the CEO instead of having sort of this regional partnership where sales and service are sort of forced to work together and they have a pyramid structure where the top of that pyramid is generally customer facing in that region, at least on some sort of a regular basis. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, you make an interesting point, because I think from a strategic perspective, from a company strategy perspective, I prefer what you've just been describing, where the sales and service work very closely together. Some companies, however, put service together with manufacturing, which also has some sense. I think probably from a customer perspective, a sensible question in that sort of imaginary new salesperson meeting new customer scenario is for the customer to ask, what is the service setup? And does he or she know how closely do they work with the local service guy or girl? That's, to me, a very interesting question that you may get a quite revealing answer to. If the salesperson doesn't even know who the service person is in that city or that state or that area, whatever, then that says something about the culture in that company, or certainly the culture of that salesperson.
Yeah, teamwork is an increasing focus at this time because of the complexity of the environments that we're selling into, the types of products and services that are being sold to the customer. And I just think it's so critical to have that sales and service partnership. I've always been a big believer in it, and I think it's really important. Nick, you did an amazing job on this interview. Anything you want to add before we close?
No, that's fine. It raised some interesting points.
That was Nick Williams, independent business consultant in the UK. This conversation lasted quite a while, Hank, and I think there were a lot of for just about everybody in the industry, no matter if they're working for the hospital or if they're a medical device rep themselves. I know I share a lot of his perspectives on what it takes to be a successful rep and really support the customer, and I'm 100% in the consultative camp. And actually, I'd even layer on top of one point that Nick made. I don't care if you're selling consumables. I think it is great for your reputation. And I think people will talk about you, and actually what a great way to differentiate yourself in that sort of commodity or consumable arena to stay consultative and continue to help the customer be successful, especially when they're trying to make decisions and you're the expert. So any data and information, and I would even say opinion that you can provide that can help people make good decisions to take care of their patients is a good thing. Really enjoyed this interview with Nick today.
Yeah, the only thing I would add, and it did come up in the interview itself, but I would remind folks out there, don't try to fake it until you make it in this space, because it is so easy for sterile processing leaders to identify a rep who is acting like they know more than they really do. It's much wiser to come in and ask for help and ask for insight so that you can do your job better to do that consultative approach, like you said, Justin. So I'm really looking forward to getting this content out into the space in order for folks to listen to and to learn from.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, or if you'd like to share a picture anonymously on our Instagram page, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank, Mike, Bob, and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.